This is AudioRx.study, where pharmacists, pharmacy students, and the pharmacy profession comes to learn through audio learning. Learn through listening at AudioRx.study, a dedicated audio platform designed for busy pharmacy students, pharmacists, and pharmacy industry professionals.
Hello, Pharmacy Podcast Nation. It's your fast forward pharmacist, Dr. Chloe Givens here. And before we dive into today's review, I just wanted to let you know that information discussed in today's episode can be found referenced in the JAMA Network Open Access Journal titled Medications for Treating Infection. Links to this journal article and more can be found listed in the show notes of this episode. And should you need any additional information, please visit the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention website. As always, if you ever have any questions or concerns, please don't hesitate to get in contact with me. You can find me on LinkedIn and Instagram, as well as my website, fastforwardpharm.com, and my email will always be linked in the show notes as well, so you can get in touch with me that way, should you need to. With that being said, let's get into today's review. Welcome back to the NAPLEX podcast, everyone. We are continuing on with part three of our infectious disease review today, and we are going to be going over our antiviral and antifungal treatment options. We are just going to dive right into today's discussion, and we are going to review the difference between our yeasts, molds, and our dimorphics. Yeasts, molds, and dimorphics are all falling under the umbrella term of fungi. Common yeasts are going to be Candida species and Cryptococcus neoformans. Common molds are our Aspergillus species. And common dimorphics are going to be Histoplasma capsulatum and Blastomyces. First off, we are going to review how we treat our systemic fungal infections, and we are going to go over the different drugs that are available. Amphotericin B is going to be the first drug we are going to cover, and this is available in a conventional form as well as a liposomal injection. With amphotericin B, we do not want to exceed 1.5 milligrams per kilogram per day in our injection, and if we do, this can cause an overdose that can result in cardiopulmonary arrest. Treatment with amphotericin B is going to require pre-medication to help decrease infusion-related reactions, and we can pre-medicate our patients with acetaminophen, NSAIDs, or diphenhydramine, or even sometimes hydrocortisone. Adverse effects associated with amphotericin B are going to include infusion-related reactions, a decrease in potassium, nephrotoxicity, a decrease in magnesium, and typically a patient will have fever, chills, headache, malaise, and even rigors. All of those symptoms are going to fall under the infusion-related reactions, signs, and symptoms. I did mention that amphotericin B is an injection, and it does require the use of a filter. We also want to be careful with the use of other nephrotoxic drugs with amphotericin B, so we want to watch out for the use of cisplatin, cyclosporin, loop diuretics, NSAIDs, vancomycin, aminoglycosides, or our radiocontrast dye. Our next treatment option for our systemic fungal infections is going to be with a drug called flucytosine, and this drug is going to work to penetrate the fungal cell wall where it is converted to fluorouracil. Flucytosine is going to be recommended to use in combination with amphotericin B, and this is going to be our treatment regimen for our cryptococcal meningitis, our cryptococcal neoformans. So you'll commonly see amphotericin given IV plus flucytosine given PO. Next up are our azole antifungals, which are enzyme inhibitors. Key features of our azoles are going to include the fact that they can increase LFTs in a patient, and they all have a risk for QT prolongation. The mechanism of action of our azole antifungals is that they work to decrease ergosterol synthesis, and this is going to inhibit fungal CYP450 and CYP3A4. Azoles do have risks for hepatotoxicity, and they can increase INR in our patients on warfarin. Fluconazole is a very common azole antifungal that you will see used for vaginal candidiasis, and it's important that you recognize that vaginal candidiasis is typically caused by C. albicans. C. galbrata and C. crucii are those that are going to be resistant in most cases. Fluconazole is going to be given at a dose of 150 milligrams given by mouth times one. And again, this is going to be our drug of choice for vaginal candidiasis. Fluconazole can also treat oral thrush as well as fungal meningitis. We also have another azole antifungal called voriconazole, and this is going to be our drug of choice for aspergillus, which you'll remember is a mold. Voriconazole can also be used for fungal meningitis, but I would remember that it is the drug of choice for aspergillus. We also have ketoconazole and itraconazole available, and itraconazole is going to be used for our dermatophytes. One key point to remember about both ketoconazole and itraconazole is that their absorption is pH dependent. So with an increase in pH, there will be a decrease in absorption. Because of this, if a patient is taking a PPI or an H2RA, then we are going to administer ketoconazole and itraconazole with 8 ounces of non-diet cola. That is going to help restore that acidic environment that these agents need for their optimal absorption. So that is very unique, so I would definitely make sure that you remember that point. We also have medications known as echinocandins, and these are only going to be supplied IV, and they are only for our resistant candida species. Remember, your resistant candida species are going to be C. galbrata or C. crucii. Echinocandins are going to work to inhibit B. diglucan synthesis in the fungal cell wall. We don't need to renally adjust these medications, and they do have adverse effects including pruritus, hypotension, facial swelling, flushing, and some people might experience an anaphylactic reaction. The two echinocandins that you need to remember for your Naplex are going to be capsofungin and micafungin. We do have a few miscellaneous drugs for treating our systemic fungal infections, and some of these are going to include agents like clotrimazole, terbinafine, and niastatin. Clotrimazole can be used to treat oral thrush, and typically we will see this compounded into a troche or lozenge formulation at a dose of 10 milligrams. Terbinafine or Lamisil is going to be our drug that we use most commonly for nail bed infections like dermatophytes. The last part of today's discussion is going to focus on how we treat our viral infections. First step is going to be our treatment for influenza. And we have what are known as neuraminidase inhibitors for the treatment of influenza. Neuraminidase inhibitors are going to work to inhibit enzyme activity, and they are going to have activity against influenza A and B. These medications are going to decrease a patient's symptoms by about 1 day, and they can also help to decrease any complications. The drugs that we have in this drug class are going to include oseltamivir or Tamiflu, and zanamivir, also known as Relenza. These medications need to be taken within 48 hours of illness onset. And for our Tamiflu, this is going to be available in capsules and suspensions. For those who are aged 12 years old and older, we are going to give a dose of 75 milligrams given twice daily for 5 days. If we are using Tamiflu for prophylaxis in this age group, then we are going to give 75 milligrams daily to the patient for a total of 10 days. Relenza's dose is a little bit different, and we can give this to patients who are 7 years old and older, and the dose they are going to receive is 10 milligrams, so 2 5-milligram inhalations, given twice daily for a total of 5 days. Next up is our treatment for herpes simplex virus and varicella zoster virus. Here we are going to utilize antivirals, and the antivirals that we have available include acyclovir, valacyclovir, and famcyclovir. Valacyclovir and famcyclovir are available PO, and acyclovir is going to be available PO, IV, in a topical formulation as well as a buccal medication. For our herpes simplex labialis, also known as cold sores or HSV-1, we can use acyclovir topical formulation applied 5 times daily for 4 days, or a patient can use an over-the-counter product known as Abreva that can be applied 5 times daily at the first sign of an outbreak. The benefit to using acyclovir is that it can also be applied on the genitals if it is needed. Genital herpes are also called HSV-2, and our treatment is going to be a little bit different from our HSV-1. With HSV-2, if a patient is experiencing their first occurrence, then they will typically present with a fever, a headache, genital lesions, and myalgias. We want to make sure we are treating within 1 day of symptom onset, so as soon as the lesion appears, and we can utilize acyclovir PO, valacyclovir PO, or famcyclovir PO. If the patient is experiencing an invasive HSV infection like encephalitis, then we are going to utilize acyclovir in its IV form, and our dose is going to be 10 milligrams per kilogram per dose, given every 8 hours for a total of 14 to 21 days. For your Naplex, I would remember that this dose is going to be based off of the patient's ideal body weight, so make sure you know how to calculate that. If you need a refresher, you can go back and review our calculation episodes of the podcast. Lastly, we are going to cover our treatment for chickenpox, shingles, and cytomegalovirus, as well as the Epstein-Barr virus. Varicella zoster virus and herpes zoster can sometimes be easily confused, and you will want to know that varicella is going to be what causes the chickenpox, and herpes zoster is going to be what causes the shingles. Initial treatment needs to be started within 72 hours of symptom onset of the zoster rash, and pain can be treated with topical agents like the lidoderm patch. For those patients who are experiencing neuropathic pain, that can be treated with antiepileptics, antidepressants, NSAIDs, and opioids. Our treatment options that we have available are going to be the same as with our genital herpes, so we can treat with acyclovir, valacyclovir, or famcyclovir. Treatment with each of these agents is going to be done for a total of 7 days. When it comes to treating cytomegalovirus or CMV, we need to understand that adult infection is going to occur in those who are severely immunocompromised. So our transplant patients and maybe even those with AIDS. The medications that we are going to use for treatment are going to include ganciclovir and valganciclovir, and valganciclovir is a prodrug for ganciclovir. For refractory or resistant cases of CMV, we can treat with foscarnet. Last up, I did just want to mention the Epstein-Barr virus, also known as EBV or the kissing virus or mono, and this is going to be a disease that is spread by bodily secretions, and unfortunately, we do not have a treatment. All right, Pharmacy Podcast Nation, that concludes part 3 of our infectious disease review. Today's episode was short and sweet, so please stay tuned for part 4, where we are going to go over our opportunistic infections. Until then, everyone, I hope you have a fantastic remainder of your day, and I will meet you back here for our final episode of the NAPLEX podcast.